This is Simply Lowai, and you're listening to The Expert with a Heart.
All right, continuing the conversation on the world of cross-border finance, really, on Simply Lowai. Hi, everybody. Ahalya here, keeping you company to continue the conversation, maintain continuity. And to help me do that, we've also got our guest, Lowai Navlakhi, of course, CEO and MD of International Money Matters Private Limited, and our expert with a heart. And Paresh Shah, who is our special guest, the CEO of Paresh Shah Partners, a financial advisor for over 20 years, who brings with him a wealth of actual cross-border financial advisory experience. Welcome back, Paresh, Lowai. So let's continue the conversation now, talking about the impact of COVID-19 on the world of cross-border finance. You know, we left the last podcast really talking about how many families had unique considerations to make at that time, because, you know, being separated across continents, of course, brings up the matter of personal finances as well. So I want to start actually from a policy, a little bit more macro point of view. From COVID-19 and the pandemic, were there any resultant changes in terms of regulations, policies that people out there should be aware of when it comes to personal financing, right? Did it impact people on that level as well?
I think most governments ended up giving out money in some way or the other. India probably did it indirectly in terms of cutting certain rates of TDS, certain, you know, benefits on tax and stuff like that. US actually sent out checks to people to, you know, to overcome the issues that they might face financially. So it was very local. I don't think there was much cross-border in that.
No, unless somebody needed support somewhere, there was not much cross-border requirements of sending over money. But I think it was the biggest cross-border was more from the family, as you mentioned earlier. It's more from the social aspect and the aspect of taking care of family. In my own personal situation, on April 10, 2020, I lost my mom. And I could not come back here for almost 18 months. So that was a
personal big loss, disaster. As the only son, I could not come back. Though we were traveling regularly pre-pandemic, no one ever expected that I would not be able to even come back for my mom's last rites, you know. But everything got done and everything was over, and we were just waiting for planes to restart, so to say. So those type of personal losses became a bigger management issue.
Yeah.
I would say in terms of finances, and to piggyback on your concept of being the advisor and being the trusted person whose opinion you will listen to, if you've flown through the cycles of investment and planning in your life, then you know that the investments tend to move in waves.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the pandemic struck, I think the biggest role that I played as an advisor, or even Lowai played, was to prevent people from going into panic mode and just saying that the world is coming to an end, let's just sell everything out, you know.
Right.
I think that emotional connect, and I can definitely tell you of a couple of my clients who are physicians, who are going to hospital every single day, seeing the deaths, and they were so impacted by it that they just came and they said, sell everything. I don't care, just sell everything. Try to convince them. They just wouldn't listen. And I think overall, the kind of money that they lost out on because of the markets did turn around, did swing back, did rally back, like it does in every cycle. So the cyclical nature of the market, the more you've been with the advisor, you've been told theoretically that after it goes down, it will come up. But once you've experienced it with that advisor, then you are definite next time that same situation happens and you have larger money at stake, you will still manage your emotions correctly.
Yeah, I mean, I think I do recall many situations of people who were in panic mode during the global financial crisis in 2008.
Yeah.
And if that same client was there in 2020, they were far calmer because they just needed a reassurance that, okay, we're looking at things and we will tell them if there is some action to be taken. But those who were newer, yes, were trying to sort of jump off the ship, if I may say, and luckily we managed to hold on to most other people.
And then also in addition, the power of a cross-border planning situation is also that there tend to be products which are available across borders, which are not available in one country versus another. And we in the US have a lot of promise-based products. That means they will perform irrespective of whether the market performs or not. They'll have a lot of downside protection built into them. So when planning a portfolio for a global citizen, if you take those products into account, then it also becomes easier to ride out the waves of the market, so to say. So I think that's where the collaborative effort that we put together makes most sense, you know.
Okay, all right. Also, you know, a big nod to all of the emotional investment, haha, pun intended, emotional investment that goes into, you know, being a good financial advisor. I don't think that part can be removed from the equation. So just wanted to acknowledge that. Now, moving on to our next scenario, right? I think this one takes the last case that we discussed on our previous podcast a step further. And it's also something I'm quite familiar with because I think I've got friends with parents of that age right now who are really, you know, in different countries. So say a couple that has settled in the US, their kids have started working, maybe they've gotten married. We'll discuss this case a little later. But so a couple who's been in the US for many, many, many years now, they're almost there with their retirement, right? That part of life is about to kick in. And they're really in the dilemma of whether or not they should move back to India or whether they should stay in the US. And more importantly, they're considering buying another property that they can spend some time in, right? So maybe they want to stay in the US but have some kind of place they can go to for a couple of months but come back to the US. So in that situation, what are the cross-border financial considerations that we're, you know, looking at?
So even before concerns, I will say that apart from the heart being there, now for some industries and some level of people, the money is also there. Mm. So we are seeing clients actually move back to India because there's better job opportunities. And on a equated basis, in fact, in terms of even dollar savings, it's a lot more that they would get here than if they continued there. So you are seeing some of that also happening. I think from a financial standpoint for them, and I think there's one other issue that happens is that people in the US, depending on where they're staying, if they're in really cold places, say, okay, real cold months we'll be in India, so let me find a place. And I think some mistake some people have made is they bought a place, you know, 10 years ago. And it's no longer the place they're going to come and live in. So I think sometimes you just need to be able to also plan when you need to buy and what you need to buy. Because whatever you saw 10 years ago, that whatever you, even if you bought the top end, top of line option, that top of line is no longer top of line, right? There's something newer and that place has started deteriorating. The thing is that in cross-border, the issue is that the maintenance of that place when you're remote is a problem. I mean, lots and lots of people who had either a parent or a close friend who was living nearby, no problem, they are taking care of things. And those friends or parents were 55, 60, now they're 65, 70. Oh, now they can't handle it anymore. Now I have to take it over. What's the option? No, I haven't figured out. And that then starts becoming an issue. So I think the money part is one part. And in that money part, I know we are only talking emotion, so maybe we should talk a little bit of number as well, numbers and finance as well. So I think the important piece for people in the US who are thinking whether to stay in US or not. I think one part is, as you said, the emotional part. I want to go back to India. You know, I feel I'll have a good support system in place. I'll have to live alone in the US because the kids are there, but they will be having their own lives and elsewhere. Therefore, they might want to make sure that they find a place which has these facilities. So whether I have the money for that, number one. Number two, even the heart piece changes as soon as the kid has a child and they are grandparents. So now you feel, oh, I need to be there. But if, let's say, there are two kids and they're two different corners of even the US, it's tough. So where are they going to stay? How are they going to live? So
I think today's biggest concern, which is overlooked, is the healthcare piece.
Yeah.
Because within the US, we have a system known as Medicare. So you contribute all your working life as a percentage of your salary. You put in money, your employer puts in money. It's around 3.8% of your income. So that's a substantial amount that you're contributing from the day you start working. This 3.8% is applicable from the first dollar that you earn in the US. So across a lifetime of 50 years, you put in large amounts of money into the system. Now, a lot of the care and the treatment that is available through Medicare Medicare kicks in at the age of 65. So it's your health insurance after the age of 65. And a lot of the Medicare treatment or physicians that you can go to, hospitals that you can go to, it's only permitted within the US. Emergency situations overseas can be taken care of, but not on a day-to-day basis, not your annual physicals. Let's say you have a condition which needs you to go and get blood work done every 3 months or 6 months. Those things are not covered by Medicare in a foreign country. So that brings to exactly to what Lovai said, which is that, are you able to, are you seeing all those calculations properly? I have known many people who did decide that they would retire eventually and come back here to India, to their native town or whatever. They've built a nice, huge house up here, 5-bedroom. They've ensured that every year they have the restrooms and beds and swings and all the facilities and a couple of staff people to take care of everything. But eventually they got into, in the situation I dealt with, this gentleman got a stroke. And that stroke needed a home health aide to come and to support him. And he needed to go regularly to get himself the physical therapy that he needed. All those things were possible in India, but there it was part of the medical insurance. Mm-hmm. And while here, he would have to pay out of pocket for all those expenses. I think that those factors need to be accounted for. I think the health situation is probably the biggest one that takes into account.
But I'm just remembering, we are discussing quite a few morbid cases. I'm remembering a positive case that, a client who's been in the US for a while, but likes the Indian environment, luckily is a business owner.
That's right.
And what he's done is he's actually set up an entity in India,
okay.
So which allows him to keep coming there. And that entity is doing well enough to pay for the family and them coming and staying and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So he's getting the best of both worlds. So I think there are obviously different paths, different people will go through, and
yeah,
it's important to keep a balance there.
Yeah.
Okay, so, I think we've discussed at length really about how one can go about navigating the cross-border financial considerations that come up in this particular situation, right, which is this shuttling. Should I leave? Should I stay? What should I do? But I think an important question also arises in the matter of personal finance when there is no intent to move, right? Say someone has decided that they want to settle in this place and they don't want to go back. But as a result, there's assets that need to be transferred, right? So for example, if I one day decide I'm going to settle down in the US, never come back to India, I still have a couple of assets here from my life that I lived here. So what happens in a transfer of assets situation, and what kind of cross-border financial implications does that bring? Because to be honest, even residing in one place for all your life, there is a transfer of assets happening there as well at some point, and it can be an incredibly complex, intricate situation. Again, lots of interpersonal dynamics at play. So what are we dealing with there?
Yeah, tell me about it. I'm working on it at this present moment. And I'll begin the answer, because this is probably the one area where I definitely feel that having a team in place is very important. By a team, I don't just mean two financial advisory firms, but we need cross-border specialization, chartered accountants. We need attorneys who can collaborate on both the sides. And what the central role that I think Lowai and I enjoy playing in these situations is being the quarterback, using an American term, being a quarterback for the entire event. Either one of us can take on that role of bringing in the right people and tapping into each other's resources to be able to do this. To give you an example, we currently have a person who's a physician in Long Island, and his parents wanted to sell a property. Give him the money. They said, no, we just want you to. He said, I will take it. I don't need the money. He himself has a multi-million-dollar apartment. He's an orthopedic surgeon, so he's making money hands over fist. Parents are saying, no, this part of your inheritance, we want to sell it and we want you to take it out right now. So how do we address the issue of A, helping him sell? That means finding the right real estate people to help him sell, taking care of the money and getting it across in the right channels across to the U.S. The taxation in terms of taxation here and taxation in the U.S. And U.S. taxation is very interesting, because if you get a property as a gift, then the cost price for that property is the price at which the original person brought it. But if you get it as an inheritance, then it is the value of the property on the day that person died. So unless you have the partnership of somebody, a team together who will take care of the tax aspect here, selling legal aspect here, transferring up there, or setting up the right structure up there, I think it's very difficult to handle this thing. And that's, I think, where we add a lot of value.
I think the good thing is that India has a pretty comfortable amount that you can transfer out. If you are a non-resident. So if you are living in the US and you are non-resident, then there is some KYC and documentation for you to have a bank account in India to get the money in. And then there's a process to get the money out. Up to $1 million a year is very easy to do. So it's not so complicated from that point of view.
Okay, all right. So I think we've pretty much tackled any kind of dilemma, but as the years go on, you might face even more intricate ones that you might have to solve.
I think one of the things that we may not have talked about, I think in that situation, is actually something where I think we're finding a lot of work to be done together, which is what you talked about, your friends, which is happening across every age group, actually.
Okay.
You know, you get a job opportunity to work for a U.S. firm. You go there, work 5 years, and you come back here.
Mm.
Now you have assets in both the countries. So relocation, not just going to the U.S., but relocation of coming back, that's a very, very important area. And we were introduced to a client who is an investment banker. He is a graduate of IIM, but then got into investment banking in a foreign firm. And then he's lived up there. He and his wife both, she was in tech, he was in investment banking. And they had their first child, and when the child was 2 years old, they felt that, no, you know, this is not the right thing to do, because both their parents were in India, in Mumbai. And they just made, one day they just said, packed everything, and they said, we're coming back here.
Mm.
And he decided to pursue his dream of becoming a scuba diver in trainer.
Okay.
He was very fond of skis. He started doing that, but then eventually his older partners in the business told him that, we need help. We've got contracts where your expertise was. So he started doing remote work, and now has created this very large 100% team in India for that company, and is managing that.
Okay.
But then in terms of what he wants to do in terms of the Indian money, I clearly introduced Lowai's team to him. And it's been a phenomenal relationship for both sides. When he comes to US or whatever he needs to do up there, his biggest goal was to keep the money in the US for his daughter's education.
Okay.
And so that's another area where I find that there is a relocation on either side with assets on both the sides, you know.
I think you have all types of situations. I think the important thing for us as advisors is that if somebody is planning to move from A country to B or B to A or anywhere else, the earlier they tell us of their intent, the better it is, because there are planning opportunities. As I mentioned earlier, the tax years are different between US and India. So something that I need to sell or something I should not sell till I go and come back or whatever, all of those things are things that we can help minimize the impact of, at least the financial impact of.
Yeah, the financial impact must be reduced at all costs. thank you, Lowai Paresh, for another fantastic episode. I'm going to pause the conversation here because, you know, in the next episode, we have to get a little bit technical. So I'm going to give you a minute, a breather. And to you, viewers as well, viewers and listeners, thank you for tuning into this episode of Simply Lowai. We're going to be back with the concluding episode of this cross-border series with Lowai Paresh and me. So catch us on that one. But yeah.
That was an episode of the Simply Lowai podcast series. Expert.